Welcome to Final Fantasy Weekly. I'm Drew Kreisman.
And I'm Ira Kreisman.
And on this episode, we have our conversation about the art and gameplay of Final Fantasy Tactics. And we've got to begin with a caveat that we usually do for these episodes, which we've done for the games 1 through 7 so far, which is that this is always the hardest part of a podcast, is to talk about visuals, right? And then, you know, the gameplay elements. These are, I guess, the two things that are the most experienced by the person playing the game, and the interactive thing, right? Where a lot of the other stuff we can pull apart and just tell you a story or talk about themes, this, that, or the other. You experience the gameplay. You look at the visuals. And we're not going to be able to do either of those for you here. But we'll do our best to share our opinions. Also, as experts on neither art, not even close,
right,
or video game development. That said, the gameplay is some of the most highly lauded aspects of this game, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Let's start with the artistic elements, and, you know, there's a lot to encapsulate there. It's not just character and world design, though those are the main things we tend to think about. And the, as we mentioned at the very beginning, the Yoshitaka Amano of the Tactics world and of Ivelisse, so in 12 and Tactics Advance, and he's actually gone on to do some work in 14 as well, is a man named Hiroshi Minagawa. He is the primary visual artist who decides what Ivelisse looks and feels like. And I'm going to start with that question to you, Ira. What does Ivelisse look and feel like, especially when compared to some of the Final Fantasy worlds we've already seen or will see again in the future?
Well, first I've got to mention that nobody's got a nose.
That is interesting, right? In the sketches and in the things, it's a very, an interesting, deliberate decision.
And I'm, you know, many of people have made that observation. It is, an interesting artistic choice. Presumably they do have noses. It's just this particular style, and many people have made that observation. Right. So beyond that, the place feels to me very detailed and very grounded. We've mentioned that before, that this story is more Game of Thronesy than it is Lord of the Ringsy, so to speak. And again, that's mostly true. And then all of a sudden, demons.
Right.
But there's only humans in this world, or at least in Tactics. There are no Moogles, no Viera, no Banga. That won't happen until later.
Right.
And so this version of Ivelisse feels like somebody crafted it. There's a lot of lace and individual links and straps and pouches and so on and so forth. So I really like the style in general. I like how each class is obviously that class. You can't mistake the white mage for a knight, the knight for a dragoon, the dragoon for a samurai, for a black mage, for an orator, and so on and so forth. It feels to me like a thing somebody made out of something physical, whereas the Final Fantasy IV especially, but 4, 5, and 6 feel very much ethereal. Mm-hmm. Those games, the art style of those games feels to me like Amano sort of pulled it out of his dreams. Whereas this one feels like our guy built it out of wood and stone and metal, you know? And so I like that it is such a distinct style from what we've seen before. And it's distinct from what we'll see in the future. Like Final Fantasy X, for example, and we'll talk about it more when we get there, has some of the weirdest costumes.
Right.
The clothes people just wear in that universe in Spira is very strange. So it's deliberately not that, right? It deliberately evokes this real world crafted sensibility, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a lot of most of the characters are wearing dull or earth tones. You know, there's not a lot of bright fancy colors. We don't see people like Cloud or Squall with their ridiculous and amazing hair. You know, people aren't carrying oversized weaponry, right? Like you said, it's all very more like it was drawn from our own real world history, particularly European medieval history. And so you do have, yeah, the clothing looks far more practical than in, say, Final Fantasy VII, where you're like, why does Cloud have that big shoulder pad thing? Like,
Sure. Yeah.
because it looks awesome, that's why. But it does feel like just about everything in Tactics has a purpose, has a function, right? And I think that, yeah, it helps set that grounded tone.
And it's not as though it weren't stylized to some degree. It's just a lesser degree, right? Like, again, the no nose thing.
Right.
Also, like, all the wrists and ankles are very big. Because there's a series of classes that you can have, all the art style is depicts the male and female of each class standing basically in the same position so that you can see all the differences between them,
Right.
right? So there's some of that going on too. But also, just like Agraeus Oaks looks so cool.
Yeah.
She just looks amazing, right? Like our named heroes get some really cool designs. I like Ramza gets two or three costume changes. Rafa and Moloch look really cool. Delita looks great. Ovelia looks great. Delita gets a couple costume changes too. Mustadio, even Miladul, the Thunder God Cid, all these characters look cool. I really like Auron, right? And so it. Again, not an art critic, but it does feel to me like it was deliberately meant to be grounded. Some of these other games are more ethereal, more metaphorical, more thematic. Maybe not more thematic, but less tangible in some ways. And this one is all about tangibility.
Right. Which is really interesting because, as we're told at the very beginning, right, it's the histories are muddied. The histories are confusing. The histories are
Yes.
maybe not 100% concrete. And so that we have that kind of dynamic. I also think it's interesting that then the cutscenes that we talked about in the War of the Lions version, have this kind of hand-drawn etherealness to them when the rest of the game really kind of doesn't. And the characters themselves, as we said, are still wearing like practical clothing, and the environments are all much more grounded and practical. But the cutscenes are very deliberately, you even mentioned how they look kind of like those wood blocks, or they're hand-drawn, almost painted. And I think that's really interesting that that's some of the way. And when you look at a lot of the like sketches, like just artwork that you can purchase, like from Final Fantasy Tactics or whatever, there's some great ones where it's like the entire cast. One of the things that this game has going for it, all the characters, you got Ramza and Agraeus and Mustadio, and then a bunch of your other companions and presumably random friends you've made along the way who are also, and we're going to get into talking about some of the job classes in a minute. When you see this like huge kind of sea of humanity all standing up for, and then they kind of blend together, and there's a little bit of etherealness to them. But those are basically the only times that we get that.
I also think it's worth mentioning that we talked before about the folks who had to translate Amano's artwork into 2D pixels, right? And so I don't know who did the work here to get from our sketches to our 3D isometric. Are those the right words? These character models, but they're great. They look fantastic. Very detailed, right? It's some of the Templar, because you don't get to meet as many of them as early on, are maybe easy to mix up, but I think all the characters really stand out well and are obviously who they are.
Really, really good and memorable character design.
Also, the environments are great, right? Like, we get a lot of indoor and outdoor environments. And it's in this 3D isometric style, which is super cool. But it's also got to be laid out on a grid so you can stand on each of the spots. And I think it's done really well. Like, again, we've talked before about how, especially in video games, it's often a depiction of a thing or a
Representation,
representation. Yeah, exactly. So it's obviously not a grassy field, but they make it look really good and believable within the style of, within the function of the gameplay of the grid system. And so I really love that. It's obvious when you can jump up on top of a tree trunk or a tree stump rather, or like a column or something, and when you can't, like when that's not going to be a thing you can interact with. So the whole thing, I love Amano's artwork. I love that ethereal watercolor feel, But I also like how this is so deliberately something else.
Yeah. Yeah, it really helps it set aside. Now, I've got a couple of critiques, but this is a midway point that you just led me to there, because I've heard some people talk about, you know, this type of game, because you were talking about the isometric viewpoint, right? Where we have these, almost every map is a big square, mm-hmm. right? And then, like you were saying, they do interesting things to populate that and give you the sense of what the world would actually look like if it was not just a big square. And like you said, representationally, and the character models, very similar, right? Where if I compared the character models to, say, Final Fantasy VIII, the game that would come right after this one on the timeline, right, they're nowhere near as detailed and lifelike and graphically impressive, right, for the people who are into the technical graphics. Tactics isn't a graphical powerhouse the way that games like 7, 8, and 9 were. But it's interesting because I see this to this day, and there are unfortunately not enough tactical RPGs, though there, a bunch of them are coming back. We're getting Tactics Ogre Reborn is coming out. Dio Field Chronicle just came out. So there's been kind of a resurgence of this type of game. And in all of those games, a triangle strategy, you have this more simplified isometric thing where the characters, they look different, don't they? And for people who aren't experts in the artistic qualities that couldn't really necessarily dial in. But I know for a lot of people, that's a big turnoff. They look at those and they go, oh, these graphics are lame. Everything kind of looks like a Lego, maybe. I don't know.
Interesting.
What do you think of that?
I can appreciate that to some degree, but I also think the style is internally consistent, which is important to me. Mm. So internally consistent to Final Fantasy Tactics, but also deliberately different from Final Fantasy VII. I think one of the things that the MCU does really well is that each project gets to be its own tone, its own style. Like those Iron Man movies are, summer blockbusters, but sometimes Captain America is in a war movie and sometimes he's in a spy thriller, right?
Right.
The new She-Hulk is sort of a sitcom workplace
right.
comedy.
Right.
So I guess it looks kind of blocky, maybe Minecrafty, we might say today.
Sure.
But I think it does such a good job of being what it is. I wouldn't want to critique it for looking blocky because it's all, you know, like you said, it's all meant to be to fit on this square. And so in a way, it sort of looks like a chess game or a miniature war game.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of what it is. So everything's got to fit. And therefore, it's all in that style, which I think is really nice. I think it looks great.
And that the gameplay is also very chess-like. Like, I think it all fits together very nicely. Though, if you ask me, and you were talking about, I agree a lot of the environments are really interesting when you're playing the game, but when I close my eyes and I picture the Gold Saucer or the Garden or Lindblom or Alexandria, and it's these big kind of wow interactive things, I don't think you really get that with Tactics outside of, again, sure, some of the cutscenes and stuff.
That's an interesting observation, because I kept saying throughout our storyline, our plot episodes, that this game is called The War of the Lions, but it's not really about the War of the Lions. It's about a much smaller story.
Right.
So in a way, we don't get any of those grand vistas.
Right.
Right. We don't get that big entrance to the Gold Saucer or in Final Fantasy 15, when you summon Ramu, you're summoning a deity, right?
Right, right.
But this game is smaller in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's much more focused in. And so I don't know that art direction style was deliberately meant to parallel that thematic
right.
point I pulled out, but maybe.
No,
and if so, then it complements it. That's great.
I think so. That makes perfect sense. It's funny, you're 100% right. I mean, we do kill a god and sit a new king on the throne, but it is a much smaller story, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. For Ramza, it's about
yeah.
casting off the shackles of his family's legacy and forging a new path, and that path really is, I'm going to save my sister, and we're going to get the heck out of this crazy town.
Yep. All right, Ira, let's get woke.
Sure, yeah.
Let's do the classic FF Weekly critiques of things that are maybe a little more capital P problematic. And not really.
Sure.
And this is, we're looking at it, you know, through a modern lens and certainly not something we noticed at the time. We did point out that there are a handful of darker skinned characters throughout the story. One thing, though, really paying attention to this stuff more and more lately that I've noticed, especially with character creation, only men and women, all of them white.
Yeah, and mostly blonde or auburn haired.
Yeah.
Yeah, default seems to be white and light haired. That's a bummer. I do think that at the time there's not going to be the same sort of character creation options we have now.
Right.
And if you need to have, I don't know, how hard would it have been to have three skin tones that you could choose from for your
right
for your more generic characters?
And even, you know, it hasn't even become common. I only saw just very recently, I believe Harvestella, which is Square Enix's like new RPG slash farm simulator slash city builder thing that actually looks really cool and interesting. And, you know, you create,
that sounds great.
Yeah, right? And at the beginning, you create your character, and the screenshot has been going around, and it's male, female, non-binary.
Excellent. Good.
And that's, you know, and you think back on all the years of character creation, all the customization options we have, that one, of course, should have been one. So, yeah, I think they probably did have the technology available that you could have had some darker-skinned characters that you could create. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, including myself, who would have loved to go around with a team that looked a little more diverse. Part of the fun of this game, part of the great, you know, we talked a little about this, and the art style will do more in the gameplay, but all of the different character classes. So when you've got your black mage that looks like a black mage and all that other things, but if you get further customization because of however else they look, and they kind of took that idea to heart with actual races in Tactics Advance, right, where you've got different races of diversity in your team. But yeah, it'd be nice. Again, it's not one of those things where you gotta go, oh, this game is racist now. That's not ever, well, usually not the point of these kinds of conversations. It's just to say, right. It would have been nice if, and should Final Fantasy Tactics ever get a re-release that's been talked about, it would be really cool if they could implement options like that.
Speaking of which, I do like that you can have male and female, that male was not just the default.
Right.
It is strange to me that dancers can only be female and bards can only be male.
Yeah, this is something that's been pushed back on over the years as well. And Final Fantasy XIV, you know, had to come around and make male Viera.
Sure, yeah.
Because there's this conversation about, like, are gender-only classes or race-only classes, which is a thing in Tactics Advance, where, you know, there are certain jobs that only Viera can do and certain jobs that only Bunga can do. And from a gameplay standpoint, that's actually really fun and interesting and creative and allows you to do a lot of fun things. But from a real-world standpoint, it does send a weird message of, like, only these people can do this thing, which is usually not what we try to, the message we try to send in these Final Fantasy games.
And my guess is that's drawn from D&D, because there's especially in early D&D, there was a lot of, well, elves get this benefit, dwarves get that benefit, humans get no benefit.
Right.
And, you know, all elves know how to fire bows. Like, every elf went to archery class.
Right.
And that's a thing they've pulled back from recently. But I was just talking an episode or two ago about how Wizards of the Coast got in trouble for their monkey folk character.
Right.
And being, you know, depicted in this classic caricature minstrel style.
Yeah.
So, yeah, D&D definitely has pulled back from this and basically said, whatever fantasy race you want to be, you can be it. You can be whatever shape. You can be whatever gender or no gender. You can be whatever colors. And the background is what's going to, the way you grew up is what's going to give you your inherent abilities,
yeah,
as opposed to the class abilities that you'll learn. And I think that's probably a better way to go. And it would be cool to see, yeah, a new Final Fantasy Tactics style, remake style, whatever it is, that just gives you more options. I think more options is fun and interesting.
Yeah, even just from a gameplay standpoint, if you pull away from all of the like real world stuff about this conversation, isn't it just more fun as a gamer to be able to make your main character and or your team of characters and heroes whatever you want them to be, exactly what you want them to be? That's part of the fun of playing a video game, is that it's interactive and you get to make it your experience. And so, yeah, more options are almost all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Always a good thing. All right, the perfect transition into our conversation about gameplay is to spend a little bit of time talking about the job system, or really the jobs at first, because some of them look really cool too. We talked about some great character designs. You never get tired of looking at a dragoon, but man, does the Final Fantasy Tactics dragoon look cool.
Yeah.
The summoner brings back the, you know, the horn design, but it looks like it's maybe like kind of a bandana or a crown that they're wearing when they become summoner. I've always loved the geomancer design in this game. We've talked about how previously geomancers had looked kind of goofy.
I like
that they get to kind of look badass in this. Of course, things like the ninja and the dark knight are... It's hard to mess those designs up, and they didn't. I do take a little bit of issue with the fact that the female ninja doesn't have her face covered. I guess that was just so we could see that she's a female ninja, but, like, you're a ninja, cover your face.
And they're pop culture ninjas as much as they are historic ninjas.
So those are just some of my favorite designs from the classes, but let's talk about what they actually are and what they do and how they impact gameplay. Ira, what are the jobs of Final Fantasy Tactics?
Squire, Chemist, Knight, Archer, White Mage, Black Mage, Monk, Thief, Mystic, Time Mage, Geomancer, Dragoon, Orator, Summoner, Samurai, Ninja, Arithmetician, Dancer, Bard, Mime, and I use the War of the Lions names, Arithmetician rather than Calculator, for example, and there are two more classes added in War of the Lions, Dark Knight and Onion Knight.
Yeah.
It's cool, right?
Yeah.
and we just talked about how many we like having all these options, but there is something to be said for curating your options so that it doesn't just become a soup of everything, and I think that they did a pretty good job here. I do feel like Mystic, which I think does a lot of the status effect stuff, maybe could have been split up between White and Black Mage if you really wanted. But also, there's no Red Mage.
I was going to say.
It's kind of a bummer.
I feel like some of these jobs, like Mystic and a little bit the Orator and Arithmetician, are sort of stand-ins for the Red Mage. I think you probably could have combined all of those into a Red Mage class, but that's okay. Well, not the Arithmetician is unique and interesting. That one's pretty cool and weird, where, and I think we even talked about this in the story when it came up, because Oran has this job class, and it's just a remarkable idea of, like, just using mathematics, which technically make up, you know, everything in the universe, to deal damage to people.
And people who are really good at Final Fantasy Tactics get really good at the Arithmetician, because if you know what you're doing, you can affect everybody at a particular height with like an empowered fire spell or whatever, or you can, you know, affect everybody whose birthday lands on a whatever, you know, on a weekend, or, you know, I'm starting to make stuff up, but I don't fully understand the calculator and I never got it down the way I wanted to. But man, when you see people do it, it is cool.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, there's a lot of difference. Like, if they have this level, then you'll do this. And if they have, but It's a job I hardly ever used because I didn't understand it very well. And I wasn't going to do all the research on everyone's birthdays, or like you said, or whatever. Like, I always felt like it was going to be too involved. But that's one of the things that's great about this gameplay system, is that it can be really involved if you want it to be. But you can also kind of play it as a more traditional Final Fantasy, where you've got your mage, your knight, your ranged person, and, you know, probably eventually your summoner or whatever you want to have there. Obviously, it's pretty well known for people that have played the game, and I think even for people that haven't, that the ninja class, because specifically the skill to double wield weaponry, mm-hmm. allows you to attack twice in one turn, making the ninja, once you get that skill, definitely one of the best. Again, if you play like I do, which is without much cleverness and just to hack and slash and power your way through the game, ninja mm-hmm. is what you want.
And one of the coolest things about this game, I think, is that you then get to set the various abilities you have. So you have your class and its primary abilities. So if it's black mage, you get black magic. But then you get to add your secondary abilities. Yeah. So whatever abilities you've got from this other class, you can attach to that. So if you got a black mage who's also been a white mage, now you get black magic and white magic, right. Which might be another reason they didn't have red mages.
Right.
But then you also get a movement ability. So each class has a movement ability or two, and you can choose one of those, right? And a counter ability or a reaction ability. So you might have, like, I like to have a knight with white magic as their secondary ability. Job points up with Ramza was always a good,
yes,
like, support ability to have. Auto potion, if you just buy a bunch of potions, and then every time you're hit, your reaction is to drink a potion.
Right.
Fantastic. Right. And then maybe you keep your dragoon movement, so you can jump, you can get to any of the tall places you need. Or you might move abilities around if you know what map you're going to.
Right.
Right. Or your support ability might be that ninja dual wield. So you might be a knight in your heavy armor and have two swords and no shield.
Yeah.
So, all the options. I love it. I think it's great. And the people who really know the game can really take advantage and just make an unstoppable army. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love the gameplay of this game so much, and I'm not even an expert.
Right. Same. That is exactly how I feel. In fact, I'll say this. I feel like I'm kind of bad at this game, having beaten it maybe four times now in my life, five on this sort of replay. But it's like, I don't feel like I've ever min-maxed this game or come anywhere close, right? But I just like playing around with the options. Sometimes it's not even about that. Sometimes it's just, I've got this character. I find, and I'm sure people listening to this have done this too, that you'll become attached to the characters that you recruit, who maybe you give them their own names. In the Discord, people were talking about Alicia and Lavian, you know, like, and enjoying those characters. Yeah. And sometimes even by the classes you end up choosing, like you said, they almost start to develop a personality after a while because, well, they were a knight for a very long time, but then they did a little gig on the side where they were doing white magic for a while, and now they've got those abilities. But then, like you said, maybe they learned a move ability from the Dragoon. By the time you get to the end of the game, you've gone on this wild journey where this person has held four or five or six different jobs and had all these different roles in your army. And I often find that one of the most satisfying things about the gameplay for me, and I always like to have kind of a big army and go around and build up a lot of different characters. I will say I was going to leave some criticisms to the end. I don't have a ton, but one minor thing is that you do get some storyline characters at the end of the game who are just tend to be a lot more, like Sidolphus Orlando. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like you're going to take him into most battles and you start ignoring the characters you've built. Again, unless you're a min-maxer who's built your own characters into demigods. But I always loved that, probably more than any other Final Fantasy, if you lose the fight, you can go out and change a couple of things and come back and destroy the fight if you're just a little bit clever about it. As opposed to, you know, needing to go and grind and build up your level, or you're stuck with the three characters or the four characters that you have, you know, do it. You could go out and completely swap out your team and go into the fight with a new set of classes and jobs and characters and approach the same battle in a completely different way. And that's something that I think is just really, really cool. And again, I guess it all comes down to that same word again, options and customization. And it was really one of the first games, and still to this day, one of the best games. It's held up as an example of, like, achievement in this category. I don't know why there aren't more of these. I really don't. And like I said, they're coming back, so I guess people are realizing. But it's wild to me that there was such a long time where tactical RPGs just went out of style, because they can be so satisfying when built properly for those of us who, like you said, it's kind of like playing those game, you know, board games, not like Monopoly, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The ones with
Warhammer 40K or
or
even something like HeroQuest and HeroScape.
Yeah.
Where you've got miniatures on a board and you move them around and you, yeah. And for a lot of folks, like for Warhammer 40K, people get real attached to their armies because you buy the set, but then you got to put together the figures and they're not painted. So then you got to paint them yourself. Like that becomes your army.
Right.
Right. So we were talking about character customization. If you could put together your group of, you know, 10, 15, 20 characters and character customize the heck out of them, that becomes your army, your platoon, your crew. And that gets me back to my constant critique of Final Fantasy, which is I can't use the whole crew.
Yeah.
There's a game for Sega called Master of Monsters. A good buddy of mine had this game. And it's a tactic style. It's a hex-based map. And you summon your monsters and you fight off the other summoners. And there's no storyline. It's just the combat game. But you can have like 30 units on the field at once.
Yeah.
And my guess is the reason you can't do that, aside from technical limitations, is those fights take hours.
Sure, right.
Even with the limited animation of Sega back in the day, it takes a long time. But I kind of want that. I kind of want a Final Fantasy Tactics style game where I get to create all 20 of my characters, you know, make them look how I want, choose names and birthdays, I guess, and genders and everything, costumes, and then run them through the Final Fantasy classes and be able to have a full team out there, a full team of 20 or whatever.
Yeah. Didn't Shining Force let you take like 10 or 15 people in? It was more, right?
It was more, but you still had to leave folks behind.
Yeah.
Which was a bummer.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I want to see, especially, you know, with the... People talk about a lot in gaming these days with graphics, you know, getting to this point where it's like, how much farther forward can you go? And it's like, not just about realistic graphics. With the power of this technology, give me my 20-person customizable army in a tactical grid system. You use it for that. Even if the graphics still have to be relatively simple. Even if they still look like this, you know.
Sure.
But maybe... smoothed. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea that it might be board game like.
Yeah.
You know, there's part of Smash Brothers that is the metaphor, at least in the early games, was it's just a toy chest.
Right.
And so I kind of like that. Yeah, let's make it board game like. Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned one of the things that I had down is, I don't know if it's a critique, but it's at least worth mentioning. The battles can be very long. Not as long as the other game you were talking about, but still it's probably like on average the battles are, especially once you get into the game, once you're past the first parts, right, the setup, like 15, 20 minutes pretty regularly. Unless, you've turned yourself into a demigod and you can blow things up very quickly. If you're sort of going through the game as a normal person, you know, you're oftentimes used to Final Fantasy fights taking under a minute, sometimes, you know, later, maybe a few minutes, then a boss fight's going to take a little while, right? But even a boss fight in a standard Final Fantasy game taking 10 or 15 minutes is probably a bit of a rarity, right? But in Final Fantasy Tactics, just with the way you move everything around, and they're meant to be kind of epic, and well, they are, and so it's great, I think, but it's definitely one of those things where you got to set aside some time if you're going to go and have a battle somewhere. And some of the late game stuff that's really difficult, there can be some difficulty spikes. And as we mentioned going throughout this, I'll just end my list of critiques here. There are some really weird spots where you can get stuck. There are one or two spots where if you don't have multiple saves, you can walk into a boss fight that's very, very difficult and you can't back out of. And so that's just poor design. So again, if it's re-released, you need to be able to give people a way to back out of those things. And it wasn't fixed in the War of the Lines version, which is really weird.
Right. You just had to know to have multiple save files, I guess.
Right. But beyond that, I don't have many critiques of this gameplay system. I think it still stands up as... And I mean, you'll see, if you ever see a list out there of the greatest tactical RPGs of all time, this is always number one. And I know Tactics Ogre fans sometimes get pissed at that, because it's always number two.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a lot of critiques. I do like that. I mean, you just said the battles can take a long time, and one of the reasons is because you will know what percentage of a chance you have to succeed and the damage range before you do anything, and so you can sort of back up and have your character move differently. Maybe if I get up here, I'll have a better chance, or I'll deal more damage. Right. All of which I think is great, but it does make things take a while. There are also some aspects of the characters that I never got a good handle on. There's Brave, there's Faith, and there's the Birthday, and all of those end up mattering to the gameplay. So Brave is like how much physical damage you will deal, but also like how much physical damage can be dealt to you, I think.
Yeah.
Same with Faith, but for magic. So if you got a high Faith, you do really good with magic, but also magic can harm you more. But also it can heal you more, I think. And then if your zodiac sign is incompatible, someone's got to correct me if I'm wrong, but if your zodiac sign is incompatible, you won't work with your allies as well, but also you will deal more damage to people with whom you are incompatible, something like that. And again, for people who know all the ins and outs of these stats, that are things like, why do I care about somebody's birthday? Well, this might be why. And I think that's neat, even though I never got into it.
Yeah, and the game, in-game, it never explains any of this. This is just stuff. In the original game, I don't even think there was a tutorial. In fact, I'm not even sure. I'd have to go back and look at my War of the Lines version. Again, this is not really how we play the games, is to get into all of those details. Like you said, I just think it's cool that it's there.
Right.
You know, because I've never found the need to make that a part of my gameplay experience as well. But yeah, I've seen videos of people talking about how, yeah, line up your zodiac sign this way and check if your character's faith has this or that, and you know that you can do those things is really, really cool. I've just never done them.
I do also want to talk about my critique of this game.
Oh boy.
Which is, there are a bunch of side quests that you can send your characters on.
Yeah.
But then you don't get to interact with it at all. So you can go to the pub and, you know, something we didn't do is we didn't talk about all the little side quests and the sort of story Easter eggs. Maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah.
We'll make that call later. But there's a bunch of things that where you can investigate these ruins. Here's a treasure hunt. Go to this mysterious island. And then you'll get sort of world-building details about what this or that was, and your characters will be like, oh yeah, we went to this place and it went really well, or it didn't go so well.
I got a good feeling.
And we found a thing. Yeah, exactly. And I kind of wanted to go on those little side adventures.
Yeah.
And instead you send characters, and while they're gone, you can't use them in combat. But I'm kind of okay with that. I'm kind of okay with the idea that you might split your party to some degree. You might split your group, but then I want to follow that group too and see what else is going on. I want to go on the side quests, and you can't really. You just get reports.
Yeah, that would even be a great way of solving both of these problems, right? Where if you did have the big army, and maybe, okay, the technical limitations still don't allow you to use all of them in battle, but if then you had to split them up to send them on two different missions, that would incentivize you to carry more and develop more characters, which I think is part of the fun element of the game. But it does feel like a little bit of a letdown when you've developed all these characters and then at the end of the game there's not really anything to do with them. I also think that if that had happened today, people would be criticizing the game for being incomplete, with there being clearly material that was cut from the game that should have been in the game. And you know, so I agree with you, I'd like to experience all of those things as well. It is kind of interesting, though, that you just send your guys off and they come back and they go, hey, here's what happened, and you just got to kind of hear it from them. I don't think that's uninteresting. I just think your thing would be more interesting. So, yeah. You know, we didn't really get into equipment systems or anything like that. Talking about they're fairly basic in this game, what you'd expect out of weapons and armor and all of that, but that's just more ways that you can customize your characters. And you know, there isn't really like a materia system thing or anything like that. That's where you've got all the jobs and where that comes in. So it's yeah, it's a classic for a reason. It's something that's still fun. It's basically as fun to play today as it was when it first came out. And that's pretty impressive to say about something that came out in 1997. That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you to everyone who's reached out to us. Feel free to let us know what we missed, got wrong, or should have mentioned by finding us on Twitter at FFWeeklyPod, or by sending us a message here on the Patreon or in the Discord channel. Join us next time when we discuss the music of Final Fantasy Tactics.